So this is about calculating force-free magnetic fields by using coronal loops as a constraint in contrast to the most of the nonlinear force-free codes which use vector magnetograph data. So there are three steps involved now. You need to have the geometric coordinates of the loops, and I have now developed automated loop tracing code that can automatically trace as many loops as you want in as many filters. The second is the potential field. You get that from the line of sight magnetogram, but you have to parameterize it so that you can convert this into forward fitting code for the non-potential field. And the third step is finally you forward fit analytical null approximation to these loop data. So these are the three steps. So basically this is kind of an overview what steps are involved. From the magnetogram, you can decompose it into individual charges and you get the 3D components that gives you, say, a potential field in a simplest case. But then you have three parameters, the alphas at different locations. And on the other side, you have either stereoscopic data or single images. You high-pass filter them, trace loops. These are the traces. And now you kind of turn the knobs, you twist the loops until they fit the observed lines, and then you get the alpha maps and whatever. So the first step, the automated loop tracing, this is this code. There are three papers that describe how the latest version of the code works. If you have an image like this, this is a test image, a standard test image that have been many times used for loop tracings, and there are at least 10 different methods about loop tracing that use the same image. When you look in detail, like where the L is, if I enlarge this section, here you see a bundle of spaghettis, so these are classical loops. This is what you want to trace, but then, like here, here it's very dark, but if you blow it up, you get some ripples, which is electronic readout noise. That has also kind of curvilinear structure, so that can be a confusion. Then when you look in the center, you have the mass. Sometimes you have just by accident a curved chain of accidental features that the loop tracing code will pick out, so you have to separate that. And even here in transition region, if you increase the contrast, it looks almost like mass. All those can confuse the automated tracing of curvilinear structures. So now the latest code, this would be the result for this image. And you see pretty much the red curves is pretty much what your eye would pick out where the loops are. And successfully the thresholds were set such way it didn't pick out any of this diagonal ripple in the background as loop structures, which it could. I vary some tuning parameters like the high pass filter. Depending what high pass filter you apply, so these are the five different images, you get different number of loops. And here I vary the curvature radius constraint of the loops. Depending what curvature you allow, you get a larger number, smaller one. So you have a few tuning parameters to optimize the code. Here is an example applied to AIA image, this active region. If you high-pass filter, it looks like that. But you see there's a lot of transition region signals in the background, which you want to suppress. And this is what the code picks out. It picks out most what your eye would see as loops, but it also picks out some random structures that just have some curved topology. So that's a little bit of a challenge still. This is applied to a completely different image from the Swedish solar telescope, which shows basically the spicules, chromospheric, and the code would pick out something like 1,500 structures automatically. You get kind of a flow field of these spicules. Or here, I got from a cell biologist in the University of Utrecht, he suddenly called me and said, hey, can you apply your loop tracing code you use for solar data for my biological data, for microtubule filaments in live cells? And we did, and it worked equally well, even for low contrast images. but these structures are 16 orders of magnitude smaller than what we observe from the sun. So it's truly universal code. It has a, it does basically oriented, it's called oriented guided loop tracing. And I basically calculate at the location where it starts to trace the loop, first the first order component and then the second order curvature, and uses this as a guiding to trace subsequent segments of the same loop. And like here, this is a contour map of a small part of the picture I showed you before. And you see successfully traces the correct loop. Even there is an intersecting one at a very small angle. And you know, it could go here wrong if you don't set the constraints right. But the code is now in a point where I think it's pretty much what your eye would do. I mean, look at this small section. It's a 200 by 200 from the previous trace picture. This is what the code picks out. I think you can't do much better by eye. There's still a lot of structures in the background. For instance, this is JPEG compression. So, you know, there are a lot of other information in the picture you don't want. So now let's go to AIA data. So these are the 7 coronal filters and HMI magnetogram. So this is basically the input for my code. So you first do high-pass filtering, and you see in each wavelength, you see loop structures. Even in 304, which is mostly chromospheric, you see, for instance, there is this sigmoid-like structure in the middle that has most of the magnetic energy, actually. So that helps also if you include this image. So this is the result of the loop tracing for this set of images. You can do the loop tracing in each filter. In some, it picks up maybe 90 structures. In some, maybe 193, 171, up to 200 structures. And if I just put them all on top, so that's my constraint about the loop coordinates for the magnetic code. Now, let's go to the magnetic part of the code. First, you have the potential field. I parameterize the magnetogram by decomposing in a number of magnetic charges. Each one, the field drops off its square root of the distance. And so that gives me a parametrization of the magnetic field. For every magnetic charge, you have 4 parameters, the 3 coordinates of the location and the depths, how deep you bury the magnetic charge. Here are a few examples. These are 4 magnetograms. This is after they are decomposed in 200 components. This is basically my model, parameterized model map. And if you look at the difference, it's basically identical. So that means this is a good representation of the magnetogram, but it's fully parametrized. And now we're adding the non-potential parameters. So this, the theory about this analytical null nonlinear field approximation is described in those papers. And so this is a parameterized code you can forward fit. It's based basically on a twisted uniform flux tube, and you can look up in Eric Priest's book the analytical solution for a straight flux tube. Here I generalize it for curved field lines. You can calculate just in spherical coordinates what the divergence-free and force-free condition looks like, and you can find an analytical approximation that is accurate to second order that gives you a radial field, an azimuthal field, and an alpha, and this is what you fit to the data. So very simple, if you have just a sunspot, a single magnetic charge, the field would look like from top down like this, and from the side like this. Now, what this non-potential approximation does is adds a twist around the vertical axis, which you see here. So from top down, you get now this spiral-like field lines, and from the side like this, and he does that for every magnetic charge. Of course, the magnetic charges, they're all distributed over some part of the surface, so you have to add them up all in the right coordinate transformation in the same system. And when you plug in this analytical solution, you can see it's accurate in force-free to second order, and also the divergence freeness is zero for the potential part and accurate to second order for the non-potential part. So these are a few examples just simulating how this analytical solution goes. And then what we are most interested in is the free energy, which is the difference between the potential field and the non-potential field vector is this azimuthal magnetic field component, which is perpendicular. So the square of this is the free energy. And that's what we want to determine ultimately in flares. So here are a few test cases. If you would just use a potential field, you know, it would complete mismatch. We would measure the mismatch by the average angle between the trace structure and the field line. It's here 45 degrees. When you fit the model, it should go down to zero. So this is for one active region. If you do the potential field, it doesn't fit as well as the null fit. And here you see how the convergence of the fit, it falls almost exactly in place what is observed. So the black is now the non-potential model and the white is the observed loops. Now, first I did that with stereo data because then you have three-dimensional loop data, which is a much stronger constraint. But in most cases, we don't have good stereo data, so now we have to generalize the code to just 2D loop coordinates. And you can do that too. You just have one more degree of freedom. And so the fit is a little bit less well-constrained, but actually it works equally well. And now we're adding on the automated loop tracing. This was done by hand tracing. So the blue is the hand-traced loops, and the red is the fitted field. And the first automated loop tracing looked pretty messy. Now with the new code, it looks a bit better. But the fields are for with stereo or without, you get pretty much the same solution. So now let's go to the AIA data. Again, this is this automated tracing of these 7 AIA filters. And now let's calculate the magnetic field. So this is the blue is the tracing. I first show it in single, if you do it in single filter, you get a kind of a very spotty, but you get like in this one, 131, you can almost see the magnetic pretty much covering the whole active region. But you get in every filter slightly different solution. So what you do, so these are the six filters total. You see also the free energy has a trend that as function of the number of loops you select goes a little bit down. So there are some trends, and this is because you put more weight on the potential field loops in the outer periphery of the loops rather than on the sigmoids, on the filaments in the center of the active regions where most of the magnetic energy is. So it's important to include the 304 that has more information about this. So here is now, if I do an overview, if I do the forward fitting for all each filter, and this is if I use all together, and when I do it for all together, then you get the best solution. And the average misalignment is about 6 degrees. Now, you know, how does that compare with other codes? I just want to have one more slide where I show you a comparison with Xudan Son's case for the active region 11158, where I had this big X-class flare on 15 February, and there were already 40 papers published about this active region, this flare. So everybody of you should know that. So here is the comparison. This is the potential and the non-potential energy over 5 days that Xudan Son calculated with his Wiggleman code. And the black is what I get for my forward fitting. And we are most interested in the free energy. And in the average, it agrees very well over 5 days. Here was where the X2 class flare was. I wish this would go away. How do I? Okay. Is this? Okay, here we go. Okay, so here is the potential, non-potential energy, the free energy, which is the difference between two large quantities. So this has a larger error. This is the ratio of the free energy to the potential. So Sun gets up to 30%, and I get, if I average, also about 25%. This is the misalignment angle, so it gets more or less the same quality of solution for all these 5 days. And this is the number of loops it used. But that's the key. We wanna get here a good agreement to really claim, you know, this an ALF approximation is as good as other numerical codes, because it's a completely different method. So it will give a good cross-calibration between the different methods and validation of the two methods. Okay, I finish here.
Thanks, Mark.
So do you ever see any loops that are non-laminar? Your loops all look kind of laminar. I don't see them being tangled, wrapped around each other. I don't see any twisted flux rope. I don't see any curly fries up in the corona.
Yeah. Well, the place where they are most twisted is here. That's where I find most of the magnetic energy, most of the non-potential energy. So the filament goes from here to here. But you see, well, it's in 3D, it's helically twisted. But here it's, you know, the automated loop tracing works, gives these laminar structures outside very nicely. But in here it's so messy, in the background there's a lot of mass. So you pick out parts of it, but the code still can kind of retrieve how much it twisted here. But not so continuously as you wish. But that's a confusion problem because there's just too much mass and other structures in the core of the active region.
John, if it's quick, please.
So when you're doing the reconstruction part, are you using the transverse field at all, or is it only coming from the?
No, I don't use the transverse. It's a free parameter.
So in principle, you could do this with line of sight magnetograms.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
But you predict then from the model, you can predict what the transverse component should be. And so that will be interesting to compare.
Thank you.